recovery of the American Catholic identity and equipping all Catholics to take co-responsibility for Christ's Church.
This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being with me. It's great to be back here in Ann Arbor. As you know, I spent the week up in Boyne Mountain working with the Fellowship of Catholic University students, and it was rejuvenating. It was great just to see this next generation of Catholic leaders, missionaries, and students, and their love for the faith, their good, keen, critical mind. You can tell by the questions, very astute questions. So it was a great time. But it's great to be back with you live in the studio here. And this is kind of like home base, you know. This is what we're doing this hour. The first hour, we're going to be joined, as we are normally on Friday, first up, will be Monsi Alvarado from EWTN News in Depth. A story that just was released has to do with Pope Francis issuing restrictions on the Extraordinary Forum Masses. He's issued a new motu proprio, and we're going to find out what that means. EWTN News in Depth will be taking this story up tonight. I've asked Dr. Matthew Bunsen to join me in the first segment of today's program to go over it with us as well. And then next week, we will spend more time on it, but limited time to work with it today. But again, this is issued motu proprio. Really, it means that this is something that he delivers in terms of his that he regards as personally important. So the motu proprio that restored the generous use of the Extraordinary Forum was issued by Pope Benedict XVI in a motu proprio as well. So we'll talk more about it in just a little while. And then we're going to be joined by Father Daniel Maurer, who's an American priest who spends most of his time building the church in Eastern Russia. He happens to be in town on vacation, and I'm delighted to have him with me to take a look at what it means to be Catholic in Eastern Russia. This is a very different world. In the next hour, we're going to go into a different world, too. We're going to go back to the world of the New Testament during the Roman Empire. My guest will be the outstanding New Testament scholar, N.T. Wright. We'll look at the New Testament in its world. But first, the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, July 16th. It's the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. Pope Francis is restricting masses celebrated in the extraordinary form of the Latin Rite. It's a sweeping change to Pope Benedict XVI's 2007 apostolic letter, which acknowledged the right of all priests to say the Mass using the Roman Missal of 1962, which is in Latin. Pope Francis explained that the change is made in, quote, defense of the unity of the body of Christ. More than 100 people are dead from flash flooding in Germany and Belgium. Officials say as many as 1,500 others are still missing after floods washed away roads, piled cars on top of each other, and left houses underwater. Thousands remain homeless, with several villages cut off. Local protests continue as South Floridians stand in solidarity with relatives and friends rallying to be free of the communist island. Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart says the Biden administration has to act now because Cubans are being murdered in the streets for speaking out.
The regime is going into people's homes, grabbing kids, 14-year-old boys, 15-year-old boys, putting them on trucks and giving them clubs and then forcing them to go out there in the street and try to go beat people up.
He says the U.S. must apply more pressure. So far, President Biden has said he's only considering establishing an internet source for Cubans who have been shut out since the government removed access amid mass protest. Health officials in Los Angeles County and in Las Vegas are again recommending masks be worn indoors. The Southern Nevada Health District says there's been a rise in COVID-19 cases and fewer people are getting vaccinated. The mask recommendation includes grocery stores, malls, and casinos. I'm T. Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, we have Monsi Alvarado, host of EWTN News In Depth. We'll also be joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who will be sharing with us some information on this new motu proprio of Pope Francis. Monsi, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I loved your mention of the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Just, I'm an advisory council member for them, and I'm a big fan of their work.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful. Have four full days and nights there. It was great.
Wonderful.
Well, let's talk about tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. EWTN News In Depth. What are you leading with?
We are leading with Eucharistic cohesion.
Yes.
So talking about what it is that we're supposed to look at when we are not just believing in our faith, but animated by it. What happens when you truly believe that the Eucharist is real, when you truly believe everything that the Church teaches? Do we only believe that in the four walls of our home, or do we actually bring that with us?
Now, this is a topic that the bishops have been talking about undertaking for a few years, and it's reached popular concern recently because of President Biden. But this was a concern for the bishops before the 2020 election.
Absolutely. And I think that you're going to hear Bishop Rhodes talk about that and give you a little bit of the history of the document that they're putting together. There was a big vote that seemed to be politicized. But the reality is, sometimes born of scandal are great clarifications for our church.
Yeah.
And there is some scandal right now that is not new to the church. We've seen this before with other politicians. And it's very important to be pastoral and to reinforce the teachings of the church with great commitment to truth.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what the bishops are doing here.
Yeah, very good. So Bishop Rose is going to be with you then.
Yes, he is. And we also are, we have Dr. Matthew Bunsen as well, who will be clarifying Pope Francis's move to limit the number of Latin masses that are said and to kind of move this oversight of how that happens and who can do it.
Can I sneak in an interview with Matthew now then?
Let's do it.
Okay. Thanks, Monsi. Well, Dr. Bunsen, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'll just introduce Matthew, who's a frequent guest with me here on Crest in the Afternoon. Matthew Bunsen is executive editor and Washington bureau chief for EWTN News and also a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. Okay, Matthew, this motu proprio had been hinted at coming for a while.
It had.
And, you know, some of us thought it was just so much static. Others were convinced it was coming. This is a motu proprio, so let's start with that.
Yes.
What is a motu proprio?
Well, what it means is it's what it means quite literally is by his own hand.
Okay.
And that means that the Holy Father has issued a decree in the sort of level of papal decrees. This is one of the more common ones. We've had a number of motu proprio in this pontificate and in all pontificates. It doesn't rise to the level, for example, of an apostolic constitution, which is one of the most grave and juridical documents that a pope can issue. And then, of course, we have papal encyclicals, too.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have different weights.
Yeah.
For example, it's expected that when the Holy Father finally finishes his work on the reform of the Roman Curia, that will likely be an apostolic constitution, which is what John Paul II used when he brought his reform.
That's serious stuff.
That is very serious stuff. And then a lot of it is also, it's very inside baseball for those who sort of follow the Vatican ways, ins and out. But a motu proprio, nevertheless, has considerable weight, and this one certainly does.
Monsi, had you covered this prior to this motu proprio?
We hadn't exactly. We had covered the issue of motu proprio and what that means and how it happens, but this is something that we're going to be covering with much more detail in the coming weeks.
Yes, very good. So, Matthew, this motu proprio, Traditionis Custodes,
Custodes, yes.
Yeah.
Custodians of Tradition, which some are already seeing a certain amount of irony just in the title.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Okay. It's subtitled On the Use of the Roman Liturgy Prior to the Reform of 1970.
Yes.
I'm going to just jump in with the way this, I think, will hit a lot of people, even those who don't, you know, attend Mass that uses the 1962 Missal, or what we call the extraordinary, sometimes called the extraordinary form. The question, say, huh, what is the problem to which this is supposed to be the solution?
Right. And that's an immediate question, I think, that many people are asking. And was there that grievous a problem in the celebration of the extraordinary reform that this type of a measure was needed?
Right.
Now, if you read Pope Francis's letter, especially the one that he addressed to the bishops, even more than the document itself, the motu proprio is a legal document, and it lays out all of the different provisions. But in his letter, and this is an important aspect to these types of documents, because the letter provides the context for why the Pope decided he needed to do this. And in that, he talks about the fact that the hopes that had been present in broadening or widening the permissions for the celebration of the extraordinary form, it was really intended at the time, according to Pope Francis, to give that opportunity to those who wish to celebrate it, and then also to promote further unity in the church. Pope Francis is arguing, no, the exact opposite has happened. And he does not in any way blemish the motives, as he puts it, of St. John Paul II and Benedict XVI to allow the use of the Roman Missal. But he certainly does point out, in his view at least, that there have been problems as a result of it. And that has led to this.
Do you know what some of those problems were?
Well, the one that sort of runs through this whole document is the one that we often hear, that those who love and celebrate the traditional Latin Mass, the extraordinary form, are creating a kind of parallel church.
Yeah.
Or they are not fostering unity in the church. And it also has excessive distortions. Now, in fairness to this motu proprio, Pope Francis is also noting in his letter to the bishops that he's saddened by abuses in the celebration of the liturgy on all sides, as he puts it. So he says that he quotes Pope Benedict XVI in saying that in many places the prescriptions of the new missal are not observed in celebration, but indeed come to be interpreted as an authorization for or even a requirement of creativity, which leads to almost unbearable distortions. So, which I think all of us, unfortunately, can certainly attest to.
Who even witnesses to some of this, yes.
Yes, exactly. In this case, though, and it's the sense of unity that Pope Francis is trying to get at here. Not necessarily rigorous uniformity, but I think trying to prevent different groups and factions. He quotes, St. Paul about that.
Right, yeah.
And so,
first three chapters of 1 Corinthians is all concerned about factions and division in the church. It's a major problem in the first century, and it's always a problem. It's always a danger.
That's right. Now, the risk in some ways is that the tone in places here can be interpreted by some as very harsh, that he is pointing out problems that exist.
Yeah.
Also, there are those, I think, who would read through especially the specifics of the motu proprio and make the case that what Pope Francis may be trying, or those who are going to interpret it, want the eventual sort of extinction of the extraordinary form entirely. They'll point to, for example, to one of the restrictions that exists, which is the limitations on new ordinations, new ordinands, or newly ordained priests, who wish to learn this and to celebrate it, are now required to have a formal request put into their bishop, who himself then has to send this to Rome. And the question is going to be asked, well, how many of these are actually going to be approved?
Right, right.
Then we have the added potential problem of each diocese is likely to be very different from the next one in how broadly a bishop chooses to interpret and grant his permission for the celebration of this.
Right. It's easy for me to do second-guessing here and to play Friday afternoon quarterback, but excesses, if there were misplaced enthusiasms, if there was a spirit of contention or division that was growing up in certain communities regarding the use of the extraordinary form, couldn't he have delivered a motu proprio with a warning saying, look, this is not what we intended, to repent of these things so the form can be continued.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not Pope. I'm not
right.
Even bishop or priest. But my point is, sometimes you wonder if the cure is worse than the disease.
Well, and that's already one of the major questions being asked here. And it feeds into, I think, some of the concerns that various people have had, that is this a direct move against the whole of the extraordinary form?
Yeah.
And how is this going to be received? And what are the long-term ramifications for it? If, for example, as this I was just mentioning, the newly ordained priests have these severe restrictions placed on them, priests are already celebrating it still, have to get new permission from their bishop, and this one really prevents or blocks the formation of new groups or associations
mm-hmm.
for the celebration of it. Mm-hmm. So we are now frozen in amber, so to speak, with what is in place now,
right.
And we're also seeing the potential choking off of those who might be able to be trained to celebrate it down the road.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, being seen, as I said, by many as a very serious move against the extraordinary form in its entirety.
You know, I think your experience is, I think, similar to mine, and Monsi's is probably similar, too, and that is we've probably all seen people who, in their enthusiasm, develop a certain kind of elitism, my mass is better than your mass, kind of, you know. But at the same time, I know that I've seen the extraordinary form just done with absolute beauty and reverence and thoroughly, thoroughly engaging. And I'm just curious. Monsi, how about you? Have you seen this kind of thing?
Of course, there's no question that this desire for reverence and true understanding of the presence of Jesus Christ in the consecration and in the Eucharist is something that everyone longs for. And I think for young people who are coming into the church now, they are very much motivated by that.
Yeah.
And so it is something that you've seen. But at the same time, it's something that we have to look out for.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we're listening to EWTN News in Depth tonight, 8 Eastern Time. Monsi Alvarado, host, thank you so much. And Dr. Matthew Bunsen, always good to talk with you, Matthew.
Good to be with you.
We'll
God bless.
Next
thank
week.
You so much.
All
you
right.
Will.
Thanks, Matthew.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matthew.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, deli, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalace.net.
There is a silent suffering happening all around us. Families don't know where they will get their next meal. Diseases go untreated. Jesus tells us that following him means that when we see someone who is hungry, we feed them. When we see someone who is sick, we care for them. At Hope Clinic, you can be salt and light in the world. Last year, your support met over 60,000 requests for help. Visit thehopeclinic.org to make lives better in Jesus' name.
July is quickly coming to a close, and so are the great deals on all new Jeep and Ram pickups at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Don't miss their Make This the Summer event going on now. You can lease a new Jeep Compass, or Jeep Cherokee for only $239 per month, or a Jeep Grand Cherokee for only $259 per month, and the award-winning all-new 2022 Ram Crew Cab Bighorn for only $289 per month. So come in and pick out your dream vehicle today at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at pinckneychrysler.com.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
I'm Dr. Greg Popchak from More to Life. One of the best memories I have from doing the show is a time when a couple had called in. Actually, it was the husband who called, and he was talking about an argument that he was having with his wife. And as he was describing the situation, I heard little comments kind of in the background, just very quietly kind of coming over every once in a while, correcting him or adding additional information. And Lisa and I said, is your wife there? And he said she was, and in fact she was on speakerphone in their car, and they were having the fight right then, and they were listening to the show, and they decided to call in and see what we had to say about it. I love the opportunity to really just get in the middle of these kinds of things and help people through them, and Catholic Radio really enables us to have those little intimate moments, and the great thing about it was we were able to help that couple work through that struggle and find their solutions. I love having that chance to interact with folks that way, and there's a great opportunity for us to interact together coming up at the Family Fun Picnic on August 28th. We'd love for you to be there. We'd love to get some time with you and see you on August 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Come on by. Let's meet. Let's chat. Let's have a great time together.
There is something for everyone at our three-day celebration for the listeners at Ave Maria Radio's 25th anniversary. Find out the details by going to AveMariaRadio.net, and we're excited to talk with you in person during the last weekend in August.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, Father Daniel Maurer. He's an American priest who spends most of his time helping to build the church in eastern Russia, southeastern Russia. He happens to be home for vacation and gave us notice that he was here, and we're delighted to bring him in today to help us understand the state of the church in that area of the world. And you just flew in.
Just flew in just 2 hours ago.
Wow. Well, how what's it take to get from southeast Russia to the United States?
Well, there's the before COVID and the during COVID.
Okay, all right.
Before COVID, it was always across the Pacific. Vladivostok is just 2 hours straight north of Seoul, Korea, and that's a big hub for flights. So we would usually fly to Korea and then over the Pacific to either San Francisco, an 11 or 12-hour flight, depending on the wind. Twice I did it to Atlanta. That was 15 or 16 hours. Mm. But last summer and this summer, COVID times, the only way out of Russia is through Moscow. So Vladivostok is itself a 9.5-hour flight nonstop to Moscow. And you're still in the same country.
It's a big country.
It's a huge country. 11 time zones.
11?
Time zones, yeah. And then from Moscow to New York was another 10 hours. And then I went first from New York to Fort Lauderdale to visit my mother, who's 97.
Okay.
So it was 21-hour flights in the air. Yeah.
Oh, that would be tough. I don't enjoy that. I don't mind flying, but that sounds... Can you fly first class for that?
No, not at all. But my second flight, one of the long ones from Moscow to New York, I had a 4-person row all to myself, so I slept well.
Yeah,
it was nice.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, how you got involved in this mission, because it's unusual.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Father Myron Effing and I were Crozier mm-hmm. fathers. Well, I wasn't a priest. I was a brother, a seminarian. Okay. The Croziers are the canons regular of the Order of the Holy Cross, and they're in this country since 1910 yeah. from Belgium and Holland. Canons regular is a very liturgical charism. The Norbertines are canons regular also. Okay. And we were in the Croziers.
What does that mean, canons regular?
Canons regular. Canons means a list of official priests. This is from the earliest part of the church. And regular means who live according to a rule.
Okay.
And the rule of life of all 21 orders of canons regular now is the rule of St. Augustine. In the earlier days, there might have been another one or two, but they've died out and the Augustinians have taken over. So I tell the Order of St. Augustine, the OSA, that we had the rule before they did. And we love the rule, and we love this. It's very communal. In fact, the rule of St. Augustine is the most communal rule in the history of the church. The first part of the rule is, St. Augustine says to us, my dearest brothers, the first purpose for which you have come together is to live in unity in the house and to be of one heart and one mind intent upon the Lord.
He had a strong understanding of friendship and its spiritual benefits.
Yes.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing that you combine with that community is liturgy. The canons were often the official priests of the diocese, of the cathedral parish. So they did the liturgies for the people and with the people, mm-hmm. unlike the monks who did the liturgy for the people but not with the people. Mm-hmm. And they were out in the desert or on the mountaintop,
right.
And we were in the big cities and central parishes.
So your order undertook this mission task?
Well, we're an offshoot of the order because there was many problems after the council with many orders.
Okay.
So we broke away and started a new group, and we wanted to do it in a place where we were needed. And we also had to do it in a place where we could find an Episcopal sponsor. So we first started on Guam, and then after 1 year we moved to California, and then after California, Father Myron had read an article, even when he was on Guam, he said, soon there'll be a great need for priests in the Soviet Far East. And that was in 1989 that he read that. And the reason for that was that because there were many Catholics exiled to the camps in the Far East, and then they didn't have any other place to go return to, so they were still there.
Wow.
And there were a lot of Americans don't realize. People ask me in America, why are you Roman Catholics in Russia? Isn't Russia an Orthodox country?
Right.
And I say predominantly it was before the Communist Revolution. But people don't realize that before the Communist Revolution of 1917, there were 17 million Roman Catholics in Russia.
In Russia.
And they had created 550 parishes.
Okay.
And one of them was in the city of Vladivostok, which is the largest city in the Russian Far East on the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And all of the parishes were closed. Now, people say that's not true. There were two churches open, one in Moscow and one in St. Petersburg. That's true. But they were no longer parishes. They could not be parishes. They were just churches, shells. And they were there to have a facade of religious freedom. But there oftentimes were not even a priest attached to them. So everything else was closed. Most of it was destroyed. All organizations were destroyed. Our church remained because there was an easier way of dealing with the Catholic problem. Our 15,000 parishioners, most of them were killed.
Oh, mercy.
And they had their backs to the sea. There was no place further that they could go. So our church was taken away. In Vladivostok, a city then of 120,000 people, there were 28 Orthodox churches. 27 of them were completely destroyed. And the two largest, the cathedral on the central square of downtown and a beautiful new basilica of Our Blessed Mother, Orthodox, were blown up by dynamite in 1937 on Easter Sunday.
We're talking about sticking it to you.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. But our church just completed at the time the communists were arriving in the city, was taken away. There was an easier... They didn't have to destroy the church because they could just shoot everybody And then they, you could use it as a building for their own purposes. It became the archive building of the communist state government of the Russian Far East. Oh. And in order to have more room for the books and papers of the archival collection, they constructed three stories in the interior of steel-reinforced concrete floors to last the communist millennium. And everything religious was destroyed.
Oh.
And there were two beautiful stone crosses on the exterior. They chipped them away.
Oh.
So there would be no evidence that it ever had been a religious building.
Oh.
The persecution was total. There were more martyrs, I mean true martyrs, people killed for Christ in Russia, in the Soviet Union, in the 20th century, than in all of the other countries in the world in the 2,000-year history of Christianity put together.
And that is because there were so many Catholics who were considered... I mean, if you were a Catholic, were you considered an enemy of the state?
If you were a practicing Catholic,
Catholic.
You wanted to remain and to teach your children the faith, and then when I say more martyrs, I say Christian martyrs. That includes the Orthodox.
Okay, that's where I was going to go with that.
Protestant, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. We know that four generations of atheism can't kill God, but can have one heck of an effect
it
on
certainly
the
can.
People.
It can. And one of the things that was really terrible for Russia was the way that they persecuted the Orthodox Church. They couldn't kill all of the Orthodox.
Right.
There was 95% of the population.
They had no population.
Yeah, right, exactly. So what they did was they just persecuted those who felt the need to practice. And they made it impossible. And when Stalin was alive, and he died in 54 on my birthday, I was 3 years old when Stalin died on my birthday, there was a huge persecution before that. But after that, the terror stopped. And then there was just, you wouldn't be killed for practicing your faith, but you certainly could lose your apartment. Your children could lose the right to have a higher education. Nobody could get ahead at all. So
this was under Stalin?
After Stalin.
Even after Stalin?
Oh, yeah.
In spite of Khrushchev?
No, Khrushchev did more than Stalin to persecute the church.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah, there had been certain monasteries that were allowed to have some. He emptied everybody out. Everybody out. No way. Just go home.
So, and he did this with the intention of just moving the entire nation closer to an absolute atheism.
Right, an absolute atheism, and also it was control, because if people were being taught but with another philosophy and theology, you couldn't control
them. That's right. They so have a different allegiance.
It was a totalitarian system, yeah.
You know, as Catholics, we believe human beings are made for God and that they flourish best when they have a good relationship with God. When you grow up in a land in which atheism is the official ideology of the state, some people will probably still continue to encounter moments of divine awareness. They may still pray. But it's got to have a debilitating effect overall.
A terrible, terrible defect. Now, in general, though, Russians are wonderful people. They have a real beauty of soul, and they're very, very romantic and emotional.
Yeah.
But there's a lot wrong with the morality. And the one thing that the communists did right from the very beginning in 1921, just 3 years after the revolution, was to legalize abortion in every circumstance in 1921.
Wow.
So now my mother, I was there with her. She's 97. She was born in 24. So that means my grandmother's generation grew up with abortion. The average woman in the Soviet Union had 8 to 12 abortions, average. And I have spoken to many women who told me that they have had in the 30s.
And it's just hard to imagine
all of the shame and the anger, because post-abortion syndrome is there's anger and depression, and then there's also you don't feel comfortable around children knowing what you've done,
right.
And children don't feel
they sense that
they do. So that was a big thing, and of course business ethics were non-existent, absolutely non-existent. So a contract means nothing. And so many, many things. Alcoholism was rampant.
I was going to ask about that. That's kind of celebrated. I was thinking of the Russians and their vodka. That's true.
It is true.
Yeah.
But one other, the more the Soviet...
Hold it there, okay?
Sure.
Got the music coming up. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and pick it up with vodka.
Okay.
Father Daniel Lauer, my guest, he's here visiting. He has his ministry in Southeast Russia in Vladivostok. We're going to continue to take a look at what four generations of atheism did to the men and women of Russia.
Another year has come and gone, and whether you like it or not, Uncle Sam requires you to make an accounting. Perhaps it's time to call Myler and Zipka. They work with you to legally minimize your tax bill and identify ways to reduce future taxes. Eliminate the nagging feeling that you're paying more taxes than you need to. Call Ken Zipka today at 734-930-5500. Myler and Zipka. Integrity, excellent value, and people dedicated to a long-term relationship. 734-930-5500.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
My daughter was attending her first karate belt ceremony. I watched as the instructor first inquired if all the kids knew each other. When he realized they did not, he allotted 5 minutes for each student to introduce him or herself to the other students. They had to shake hands and engage in eye contact. I was so pleased with this exercise. I'm often amazed how many adults do not make sure their children introduce themselves to other people, especially other kids. Sometimes there are events where a child will not know any of the other children in the room. Showing our kids how to interact and meet new people helps with confidence and communication skills. My daughter will often hesitate with my request, but I remind her that we're all made in the image of God, and she's the daughter of the King, and for that we are grateful. It reads in Timothy, "For everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it's received with thanksgiving." So next time you see a kid standing alone, encourage the one you know to introduce themselves. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
When I first started reaching out to a local priest for spiritual advice, he said to me, "You know, Vanessa, God's timing is not your timing." Hi, this is Vanessa Denha-Garmo, host of Epiphany. That comment always stuck with me as the impatient person that I am. I thought about that a lot over the years while talking to El Cresta and Mike Jones about starting my own show right here on Ave Maria Radio. I had been filling in for Teresa Tomeo for years, and finally, this past fall of 2020, God's timing came into play, and we launched Epiphany. It was years in the making, and it's finally here. And soon our 25th anniversary and the Family Fun Picnic will be here, and I hope you can come out and enjoy the day with us on August 28th.
Join Vanessa and all your favorite Ave Maria Radio hosts for any or all of the events on our 3-day weekend at the end of August. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to learn more.
Do you or your church have an art restoration project that needs the skills of a true professional? Look to Ethan Hayes for the premium quality results that you deserve. E.A. Hayes Studio has done excellent work, for example, at Old St. Patrick Church in Ann Arbor and St. Mary's in Pinckney. From statue restorations to high altars to new pieces, you can count on Ethan Hayes for glorious work at affordable rates. To shop and browse previous restoration work, visit eahayesstudio.com. That's eahayesstudio.com.
We have a problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church.
St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com, a nonprofit company.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Father Daniel Maurer. We've been talking about the remarkable work he's doing in southeast Russia, Vladivostok, and we're talking about the pathologies that grow up, personal and social, in a nation which is militantly atheistic. And we're talking about the number of abortions. The average woman in Russia will have 8 to 12 abortions.
In the Soviet Union.
So, what did I say?
In Russia.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. The average woman in Russia will have 8 to 12 abortions. By the way, the various nations that compose the Soviet Union, are any of them doing well?
Well, it's hard to say now during COVID, but the Baltics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, not bad.
Okay.
Belarus has suffered terribly because of Chernobyl and also because of their own political situation.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, Armenia, I don't know well enough because they're in the very far southwest of us.
Yeah.
But Russia is not doing well economically or morally.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to this place where you knew women personally who've had as many as 35 abortions.
Yes.
Uh-huh. This has to have a big effect on them personally. It also creates an environment in which abortion is just it's the thing, normal thing to do.
Right, and it creates, it destroys the family. Also, the other thing is, as you mentioned earlier to me, divorce. The statistic I heard, and I try to follow up, it's hard to find out, but I think pretty much 80% of marriages end in divorce. And it could even be that that the majority of them end within 4 years of the wedding.
Wow.
So that means most people don't remember their fathers. And the mothers raise, and the working mother raises the children, and there's not that much discipline. So it's difficult, and there's a lot of hooliganism and a lot of difficulty in Russia because of that. Also, alcoholism is rampant, and during the Soviet Union times, they couldn't deal with Alcoholics Anonymous because that's a spiritual program. You have to accept the 12 steps.
Right.
The first step is I realized that I was powerless against this disease, and I invited a higher power in to help me. Well, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
So now we, Father Myron especially, our founder and pastor, very, very, very zealous in establishing Alcoholics Anonymous in the Russian Far East.
Yeah.
And there are now probably in Vladivostok, which is a city now of 600,000 people, there are at least 30, 40, 50 groups. We remember when there was one group and it had three people in it, and it met in our church.
The Eucharist is the celebration of the new covenant. Covenant, the sacred kinship bond, there's an exchange of life. Those who enter the covenant are expected to be steadfast in covenant. The absence of that idea of covenant, especially divine human covenant, sounds like it's had a devastating impact.
Very devastating, but it's also part of, and I don't want to go too far here, part of the Orthodox environment also, because as Russian friends of mine have told me over the years, Russia was an Orthodox country, but the Russian clergy did not evangelize the people well at all.
Yeah.
And there was no popular movements, that, as there were in the Roman Catholic Church, the Francis Franciscans in their love.
Got you.
And the preaching to the people.
So there were no internal evangelical or charismatic movements that rise up. Okay.
And even, for example, St. John Bosco with children, none of the church wasn't doing that in Russia. So it didn't reach to the people. So religion, the word for parish in the Orthodox system is prichod, means where you go and where you leave. And so there's not a sense of community.
Right, right. So in a country where there's been so it sounds like it's, from an emotional point of view, fairly colorless, and the difficulty of working with... I mean, it sounds like people have very low expectations socially.
Yes, they do. Well, or if they have high expectations, they're always disappointed. And
right.
There's a lot of that going on, too. Yeah. If, in marriage, everything falling apart all the time. And so most people want to leave. I would venture to say that that's still the case.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where do they want to go?
Anywhere that they can have a better economic life. The economy is in a free fall still before COVID, maybe because of some of the sanctions, but also because of the corruption and the lack of possibilities to establish good work policies in moral policies, where there's a lot of mafia influence. It's almost
does that reach Vladivostok?
Oh yes, it's in the whole country.
Okay,
yeah.
So it runs through.
Right.
Does it start at the top?
I don't know where it starts, but it's everywhere.
Okay. You searched when you were reopening there in February 1992.
Mm-hmm.
You did an extensive search and were able to locate 15 descendants of the former 15,000 members of the parish.
No, not 15 descendants, 15 survivors.
15 survivors. Thank you. That's a very good distinction.
There had been 15,000 members of our parish, of our one parish. The reason it was so big is because it was the only parish in a 150-mile radius that the Orthodox allowed to function. So if lots of Polish, but Russian Poles, Poles who had been Russian citizens for four, five, six generations, so not just immigrants from Poland. And the liturgy was always in Latin, of course, but the people spoke Polish and the devotions were in Polish and the priests were Polish-speaking people.
Okay.
Of those 15,000, we searched the country high and low through the press and the radio and TV and anything we could do, and we were able to find 15 of them out of 15,000 who survived.
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of cooperation or not do you have with the Orthodox?
No real cooperation at all. They're historically very anti-Catholic.
So that does run through.
It does.
As dominant as they are.
They're dominant, but not in the hearts of the people. They're dominant in the political power that they have.
Yeah.
But as I have said before, practicing any faith in the Orthodox Church or in the Muslims or in the other, if you by practicing you mean being in church service more than twice a year. For Christians, if more than Christmas or Easter, you go one more time. I'll give you the benefit of that. I say, okay, well, by some reason you're
a church goer now.
Lowest level that I can define, practicing any faith in Russia today is still, after 30 years of religious freedom, fewer than 1% of the population. 99 point something percent are not practicing a faith at all.
So all of the glories of Russian Orthodoxy, mm-hmm. their architecture, mm-hmm. the divine liturgy,
mm-hmm. and even
of the wonderful theology.
And even progress, because during the time of the Soviet Union, after the terror, when they killed everybody, there were only 8 to 9% of people baptized because it was dangerous. At the height of, throughout the Soviet period, only fewer than 10% people baptized. Now it's like 74%. So it sounds like a huge victory. but they've been baptized without one lesson and not even knowing how to say the Our Father.
Yeah.
And they don't go to church at all. So that's what I mean by practicing.
I remember back before I returned to the Catholic Church, I was involved in evangelical Protestantism, and I can remember a number of when the Soviet Union collapsed, and everybody was hoping for a return of religious freedom, and there was actually some dispute going on with the Russian Orthodox over what that meant. I knew a number of evangelical Protestant mission organizations that were trying to get in and do their work there, and they were regularly met with resistance, serious resistance, from the Russian Orthodox. They saw them as sheep stealers, I think, is how they would probably characterize it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's bizarre is if you're claiming that this is your flock and they're not showing up more than 2-3 times a year, what are you doing as a shepherd?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, to defend the situation, they weren't allowed to be shepherds during the communist period. Mm-hmm. They weren't allowed to know how to even preach. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to approach people and attract them. So they're defensive for that reason too.
So tell me how you're doing there in terms of reaching people in Vladivostok.
Well, we say that, and it's true that we are there to collect the Catholic flock that had been, as I said, 15, 17 million people. Their descendants are there, and their descendants did not know anything about the faith. So, and people know that they have Catholic roots. For some reason, they knew that. So we've had lots of people approach us who knew about their Catholic roots, and they have been baptized. And we have a good little parish in Vladivostok, a city of about 600,000 people. Before COVID, we were getting about 180, 190 people a Sunday for our Russian Mass. And then we started an English Mass. Now we have a Vietnamese Mass.
Wow.
Because there are a lot of Vietnamese diaspora in the markets. They call them the Chinese markets, but they have lots of Vietnamese too. Huh. And 10% of Vietnamese are Catholic,
yeah, right.
And they're very practicing. So
very
now every Sunday night at 8:30, we get 30 to 40 Vietnamese.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like there are enough people there to form an authentic parish.
True, and it's a good parish, and they have parish meetings. They're more organized than the Russian mentality, so they do it themselves.
I'm trying to imagine what it would be like for when you've got this history of Russian Orthodoxy, and yet people don't go to church. What does the future look like?
It's hard to say because all culture is based on the family.
Yeah.
Family is the carrier of culture, the building block of culture, and the Russian family has been destroyed by the divorce. And it's not only the communists' fault. Part of the situation is that in the United States during World War II, we had 665,000 casualties, people killed, Americans killed in World War II. In the Soviet Union, it was 23 million.
That means
men. 23 million men. That's a generation of men.
This is not often thought about here in the United States.
Right.
But the price that Russia paid.
Right.
And the Soviet Union paid.
So if a woman wanted to have a family after the war, the only men who were left were the invalids and the drunks. So they would invite them in to get pregnant and then send them away, and they had a family. So it was an all-woman child family.
Father, hold it there. We'll be able to come back on the other side of the break, and I'd like to just tell people, we'll have about a minute to tell people how they can learn more and help out.
Okay. Thank you. Sure.
Father Daniel Morrow, my guest. I'm Al Cresta.
Getting the kids to practice on time. Remembering if it's your day to bring snacks. Making it to the game with a clean jersey. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with Auto Owners, insurance doesn't have to be one of them. Auto Owners works with independent agents who answer when you call, so you can worry about more important things,
like whether your kid is going to run toward first or third base. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Essie. I have an important message for all you homeschooling families. You can get an outstanding and fully accredited Catholic college education and save $100,000. To learn how, go to angelicum.net. That's angelicum.net. Earn 75 college credits and an associate's degree in high school for just $3,500 a year. And earn your BA degree just 1 year later at age 19. Check this out at angelicum.net.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Summer brings us to many events that require meticulous planning. Whether it's a graduation party, a vacation, family reunion, or simply staying at home for an afternoon of barbecuing. But how often do we consider helping our families when a death occurs? By pre-planning your arrangements at any of the six Archdiocese of Detroit cemeteries, you will remove that burden from a family's shoulders. By taking care of things today, your family will be helped tomorrow. For more information, please visit our website, cfcsdetroit.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Father Daniel Lauer. We've been talking about the work he's doing in Southeast Russia. How can people learn more? This is an incredible story.
Well, we have an extensive website. We're on the web, www.vladmission.org.
Vlad Mission.
V-L-A-D Mission.org. And there you can find out. We have offices in Modesto, California. They run our website. It's just been renewed. We have a
very nice website,
mission video, which was professionally done and given as a gift to us. It's been award-winning. It's played on EWTN many times.
Very good. This is a mission that you'll want to follow. It's one of those stories that we don't often hear about here in the United States. And I'm sure that many of you, many friends of mine and myself for a few years anyways, after the collapse of Soviet-style communism, it was thought that, oh, good heavens, freedom's there. Everything is going to blossom like a rose. But that doesn't happen after four generations of atheism. Mm-hmm. God's alive, but the benefits that come from faith in our Creator, in our Redeemer, those fruit aren't there. So, Father, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great talking with you again.
Okay.
I'm Al Cresta. We'll be back.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The doctor is in on Ave Maria Radio.
I've tried everything with this child. Nothing works. Oh, no, you haven't. We got all kinds of things we can try. I'll share them with you on The Doctor is In. Join me.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, weekdays at 1 on Ave Maria Radio.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. There's more to it than reciting the act of spiritual communion. We should begin by having sincere repentance for our sins and affirming our belief that Christ's death redeemed us. Next, we call to mind the spiritual gifts found in Christ's sacrifice and thank God earnestly for them. Now we are disposed to pray the traditional prayer of spiritual communion. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Fire on the Earth, Peter Herbeck.
Sometimes now I just think when I hear people who are baptized and they face a hardship or something or a disappointment in life, they say, forget it, I'm done with God. I'm done with God. I prayed and I didn't want this thing to happen and it happened, so forget him. And people walk away. Or there's sickness or there's disease and there's trial. Friends, we live in a fallen world. This is not the place where we're going to find our ultimate comfort and happiness. Jesus did not promise us comfort and security and safety and fun and a jacuzzi, a limo ride in Disney World. He didn't promise us this kind of comfort. He said, I will give you a kingdom and everything that belongs to me, but you must first become my disciple. You must repent of your sin.